Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, January the 4th, the fourth day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon, Humboldt County 2nd District Supervisor Cliff Clendenin. Hey, guy.
Good morning.
You know, that sounds
afternoon. Excuse me.
So much better than apple squisher.
Yes.
Or stomper.
Yes, it does.
Yes, yes. One is a little bit more regal.
and if it was a government job, it would be stomper, comma, apple, you know, or...
You'd have so much OSHA that it would be scary.
Apple stomper 2 or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
After you've worked there a couple
Formal
years.
Formal job description, the whole nine yards, yeah. This afternoon, we're going to talk about a couple of different things. We've got the court amnesty, court fine amnesty program that the state is allowing to occur. So we'll talk a bit about what that may include and what it may not include. Also, we'll get an update about the Postal Service. It's funny, everybody wants to save money, but nobody wants to be inconvenienced one iota. So we'll talk about what some of those impacts might be for Humboldt County. Southern Humboldt, the school district's talking about getting rid of the buses. Maybe. So we'll talk about that. And an update on the update. Update. When we come back.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 416. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Cliff Clendenin, but before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from Seneca. That's the apple, guys.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe it's not quite the same.
I'm sure we run them.
Seneca, New York, named after.
I'm sure we run them lots of competition.
Yes, indeed. Our quote, it's true greatness to have in one the frailty of a man and the security of a God. Yeah. He gets back to our apple stomper reference, right?
That's right.
Yes. It all goes back to apples all the time.
And they all got picked this year.
Really?
Yeah. We completed our harvest a week ago, which was late, but we got them.
Yeah. What stops an apple tree, deviation, what stops an apple tree from producing the apples? Is it the weather temperature? Is it the sunlight? Is it so many day-night cycles between?
You mean in the fall,
blooms?
In the fall when,
yeah.
when it quits?
Yeah.
It's starting to lose its leaves. The tree's shutting down. So the photosynthesis just kind of starts stopping. And as Dr. Seuss would say.
Yes. Well, can you artificially extend that?
No.
Okay,
no.
It just is what it is.
No.
In a greenhouse setting, can you get apples to...
You could probably get on, you know, with changing light, day lengths, and
right, although,
hot and cold. You could, by manipulating the season, basically, you could probably do almost anything you wanted in a greenhouse setting. This was an unusual year because it was a cool spring and then very cool growing season and then... kind of a relatively cool fall, and it just you know, but mostly it was the summer and the spring. Everything was just off to a late start, and so I would say the apple harvest was delayed by probably 3 weeks to a month, which wasn't fatal for us because we can.
No, but that is the difference between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
With the nice still weather, we can still harvest them. They don't get blown off. We didn't have any storms, but it wasn't. The grape growers weren't, both locally and down in Sonoma County and such, weren't nearly so lucky because once the rot starts, they're
sayonara, baby.
The clock's ticking. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Cliff, let's talk a little bit about the bus situation in the Garberville, Southern Humboldt area for schools. I guess it starts with a school.
Yeah, in a rural school district like that. And Southern Humboldt would be a real extreme example, highly dependent on bus service. Well, buses aren't a mandated school service, and this is really, I have to put a caveat here, and this is out of the purview of the Board of Supervisors. The schools have their own state funding that stems from property tax, and that, you know, comes from local property tax, goes to the state, come back. Nevertheless, it's a community issue because there's a huge amount of families that, you know, dutifully put their kids on the bus to get to school every day, and if that system unravels, we've got a problem. And so one of the things we're looking at is talking to representatives from Humboldt Transit Authority, of which a couple of our board members are members, is to see, is there some way to use that bus service and combine forces? One of the things that you get from the kind of economy and that we have now and the kind of government budgets is you get some real challenges. The services as they used to be delivered aren't necessarily going to happen in the same way. So we can hand wring, or I think the what taxpayers would like us to do is to let's think of some creative way we can take some existing service, some existing funding, and maybe repurpose that, and that would help Humboldt Transit perhaps. And there's of course different regulations in how a transit bus runs and the mandates for a school bus.
School buses have a higher
standard,
safety standard. I
believe they do, and so I've asked the Humboldt Transit folks to research that, and next week we'll be looking at in January we'll be looking at some options of what we can do there.
Is there any concern about commingling of funds? Because I know that the government tends to be very categorical.
It's very silo. You know, this fund and this computer and this secretary.
You pay the front half of the bus. I pay for the back end of the bus.
That's a real challenge. It's always been. Even with local bus service like the Fortuna Senior Bus, it'll only work in the city of Fortuna. So Loop Road or some place that you know heads for part of its distance out of the city limits. The bus can't go there, even though it's just...
Really? Just can't even cross the line?
No. So somebody can bring somebody down to the city limits. So there's some kind of moronic ways that this gets played out.
Is this a California thing?
Oh, it's just a government thing.
Or it's a federal thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And you don't want funds misused, so funds are allocated to a jurisdiction for a purpose, and,
I would think that there would be an opportunity to have a waiver formally done by two bodies of electeds for, let's say, that example. Okay, Loop Road, let's say it's a quarter mile out, and then it comes back into the city.
Right.
Well, that's crazy not to continue with that and perhaps otherwise have to go through a detour that's twice as distant or takes twice as much time.
And that's that's the science of MOUs, memorandums of understanding between bodies. They're formal agreements that set up those. And I know that we do that in between, say, Humboldt and Trinity and Humboldt and Mendocino County road crews. Sometimes that other county can get to the second county easier than so they can kind of
and the sheriff
they,
also
they can trade back and forth.
Oreck versus Klamath.
To get to some northern Mendocino roads, they actually drive the Shelter Cove Road through Humboldt to get there. It's easier to get there. So anyway, we'll be looking at that for southern Humboldt and try to see if we can bring some other county effort to bear to help that out, because that would be really untenable. They have an $800,000 budget, and they're losing, I can't remember if it's the big half or the small half, they're losing approximately half of that. So
And it is a sparsely populated area where the buses are running.
Yeah,
so.
And it's easy to say, well, gee, that's not a mandated service for the school. On the other hand, if the kids aren't in school, kind of nothing else matters. It doesn't matter if you heat the classroom, pay the teacher, or anything else, because it's a system that has to work together.
The bunny on the bookshelf is nice, but that's not why we have school.
Right.
Is there any movement on the new executive director for HTA?
Yes, we have one now.
And?
And his name is Greg Pratt, and he's doing a great job. He's been there a while, and after a big search, we basically landed on an internal candidate, and I have to say we've seen that in Humboldt County several times where we've grown our own rather than pull somebody in from the outside. You need to have an open process, but that was a very difficult process that was fraught with lots of twists and turns to select the new executive director. And then we ended up with the guy that was in our backyard. So it was
and
great.
You keep going back to the agricultural references to Humboldt County.
Yeah.
This is kind of an intriguing concept. KINS, News and Information Times, 424. We'll be back with more from Cliff Clendenin.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money. You won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 428. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Cliff Clendenin. Cliff, if the bus district and combining that with the Humboldt Transit Authority is a challenging situation, I don't think that there's been anything that's been more challenging than the general plan update. Rife with plenty of opinion from 360-degree perspectives. We've seen state law change in the interim. We've seen city law change in the interim. We've seen funding change. There's not a single thing I would suggest that was in effect 24, 25 years ago, whenever the last one went through, that hasn't changed significantly in the interim. Including even the population bases served in the county.
Mm-hmm.
So as you're starting to get close to potential adoption, you realize how much fun I'm having saying this and dragging it out.
You're okay, really drawing this out here.
Good. How much of a life is this thing going to have before it's back to the drawing board again and continually updating the elements of the general plan, or start the whole process again, understanding that it's probably going to be another 15 years or so before this thing gets whipped out on the next cycle?
I'm thinking with the rigorous review that this one's had and the 3 years in front of the Planning Commission, I think we've got a good 20 years out of this one. And this will be coming in front of the Board of Supervisors this spring. And it's finishing its last pieces in front of the Planning Commission. I think in watching some of those sessions, and I haven't caught all of them, but in watching some of those sessions, it's just amazing almost every aspect of your life is in some way affected by this. You know, it's the noise element, the traffic elements.
It's kind of scary how long reaching the tentacles are on this thing.
Yeah. And California has some bizarre pieces. This piece that we're doing with the housing element interminably, where housing and community development comment on local planning. And then so we've kind of got two venues now. We've got the local venue where this gets discussed, and then it gets discussed again in Sacramento and then back and forth. And that. So you mentioned, coming up to a new cycle. Well, I think it's the 2009 housing element, so those are on a 5-year cycle versus a 20-year cycle for a general plan. So we need to start doing the background for the 2014 one now, and here we are still slugging out the last one.
You guys get the poundage delivered in a couple of weeks, maybe, hopefully, kind of, sort of. Now it's taken the Planning Commission 3 years to battle through it, the public meetings years, decades to battle through it. What kind of timeline are you guys on? Do you get 6 months to look at this thing to really kind of understand so that your vote isn't just a rubber stamp?
And I think what I'm going to hope that we do, and my 20% will ask of planning staff, and I believe they're headed in this direction, but give us a consent calendar, if you will, of all the general plan that was basically uncontested, that had unanimous votes or near unanimous votes. And let's make a consent calendar out of that. And really, like a lot of things, like our board's consent calendar, it'll be, the bulk of it.
It's 4:31.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a Lampus to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
I thought I could talk faster, just quit.
Now you have a full chance again. It's 4:35. We're back with Cliff. As you look at the general plan and you kind of get this grasp of it, I mean, that simple idea that you have probably will take out 2/3 of the poundage.
Yes.
Of what you have to read. Why isn't that something that is procedural with everything that you guys deal with? I mean, the idea is so simple.
Well, we do our standard consent calendar. You know, if we discussed every contract with a Health and Human Services agency to place a kid at some home in Fresno for everything. I mean, that's a 35-page contract, and it's part of the C section in our weekly board agenda. So, and some jurisdictions they pass a general plan in a season. You know, through the whole process. We've taken this exhaustive look, and we've got a very diverse county and a lot of people to listen to, and we have. So then we'll take this few months is in my mind frame what we'll be doing. We're going to have some workshops on Monday afternoon, so we won't be trying to squeeze this into a board day. We'll have some workshops there'll be noticed meetings, legal meetings, with all five of us there. But at the same time, it'll be a little more free-ranging, like some of the workshops that the Planning Commission had, where we can kind of explore a topic. And you know that, for instance, one of the centerpieces will be, the quantity and quality and type of housing in timberland that we're going to allow. And it's the pull-tug of wanting to protect resource land at the same time, wanting to give a property owner or a landowner the opportunity and the rights that go with that land. So what's the public interest versus the private interest? And, we're the ones that are supposed to try to strike that balance.
How much influence do the five electeds have on the general plan? You get provided the document.
We get to do anything we want.
So you could throw it back and say unacceptable?
We could rubber
stamp it?
Yeah.
Without discussion?
The only state mandate is that for a general plan amendment or a general plan update, you have to have one public meeting. That's the minimum standard. So we're going to have at minimum several, if not many, but we could, we wield an immense amount of power, and we do have the final say over that. Of course, the general plan can get can head for the courts if someone decides to challenge it in court. I'm hoping we get enough of a balance where. We don't get burdened with that, but if we get it wrong, that's certainly someone's right, or even if someone thinks we've got it wrong, that's certainly their right to take that course.
Wherever that course may lead them, right? Yeah. Because we've all heard the phrase, a course is a course, of course, of course.
Okay, so maybe not. Interestingly, though, in looking at some other counties and jurisdictions, we feel like we're an island. We're the only one that ever has a general plan. I watched Fortuna's go through relatively smoothly, good public process, lot of people involved. But some jurisdictions have they've been mired in these for years.
That's why I think rather than a general plan, I'm far more comfortable with elements being passed independently of the others. Of course, they can't all be done that way.
No, and then they have to be internally consistent.
Right,
they have
right. To, so it's a module, but they all still have to be kind of cohesive at the same time. It would seem that that would be a far easier process and much more manageable than this pig in the python that has just caused so much consternation for so many decades.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any thought to adjusting that and doing it element by element rather than the entire
plan? Well, I think just like we touched on there for a minute, I think you're going to have to, these elements have to fit with each other. It's a jigsaw puzzle. And so you work on each one of these, you polish up each one of these pieces, and then, you know, it's the stage now where you're tucking these together. And, you know, you can't have one piece that... I'm not even going to think of an example right now, but they have to make sense and they have to be generally cohesive, and as you mentioned earlier, they have to fit with state law, and I know that I heard one of the discussions I was watching Suddenlink and watching one of the discussions on the Fortuna General Plan, and one of the commissioners was saying, so why do we need this? You know, I don't really like this language, and the planner, you know, dutifully said, well. That's state law.
Yeah.
So, yes, it will be in there.
The governor says so. Yeah. Nothing easy, huh?
No.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 4:41. We'll be back with more from Cliff Clendenin.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 4:44. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Cliff Clendenin. Cliff, as you look at some of the landscape today with the Postal Service, I see it. And, of course, you know, I'm living in the middle of Eureka, so it doesn't impact us too much. Out here, we're in the county. You know, now we still get the mail in the late afternoon. So.
And they're not planning on closing the Eureka Post Office, are they?
Who knows? You know, anymore, who knows? But we can look around, and there are a number of post offices, even in the greater Eureka area, that you kind of scratch your head and go, huh? Why? Why bother? Now, I don't know if in the big scheme of things it would save enough money to make sense, but I would think that coming in and looking at doing business better would be something that any business entity would be in favor of, private or public.
Right.
And then we start looking at the changing load and go, okay, well, this model isn't working. I mean, how many billion were lost last year and billion the year before?
Five
and billions?
Or something. Yeah.
I mean, the model obviously is broken. So just even, it's interesting for me to see the discussion about this and the wailing and the gnashing of teeth and the hand wringing and, oh, well, it's not working, folks.
Right. But to me, wouldn't, as a business owner, wouldn't you, when you lost the first half a billion, wouldn't you start to put some plans in place at that point rather than...
I would be personally a little sensitive if we lost half a billion in the first year. Yeah.
Yeah. And then wouldn't you, you know, start tweaking things right away? This is so the two major changes they're looking at is first closing a few thousand rural post offices nationwide, and then the second, which was more recently in the news and meeting at the Warfinger, was changing and compacting the distribution centers and closing this one in Eureka, for instance, our local example, and moving that. Distribution, having that combined with Medford. So what I would rather see them look at, for one, back to the rural post offices like Honeydew and Blocksburg. I mean, these are small entities, but you know, close one in close little satellites that are basically, you know, in the Eureka area and have that coalesce.
Cut and
Yeah.
As example.
I mean, that would be, you know, that would impact some folks, yes, but that would be such a smaller impact than somebody driving on an icy road to Alder Point from Blocksburg.
Well, we've got, four of them in Eureka?
Yeah, and just
a population of 30,000, we got four of them?
And just the
I mean, that's a logical one.
Just the environmental impact and let alone the safety of having somebody drive their vehicle to go pick up mail. And
so is that not being looked at as part of this?
Well, we're in our Board of Supervisors letters to the U.S. Postal Service and our representatives, we've certainly made that clear. And then I was...
Was it received?
Well, it's hard to say. Well, you know, they say they're taking input, and now we haven't, you know, heard the comeback from that. The meeting at the Warfinger a couple weeks ago about the closing of the distribution center here in Eureka, I was really interested in how articulate and different some of the input was from the trucker talking about the difficulty of 199 and the curves he knew where you would signal oncoming drivers because you can't pass. There's certain corners.
It happens now, though. When Brookings gets the mail from Eugene and it's not coming down 101.
Yeah.
So it's possible.
It's possible. But anyway, then from John Bartholomew, the treasurer tax collector, and Carolyn Cernich, the recorder, talking about tax bills and elections, you're changing things in the way the county delivers service. And I'm not saying it couldn't change, but...
It might take an extra day to deliver stuff.
But the number of people that vote now vote by mail, vote absentee ballot, and in those last couple days, there'd have to be quite an adjustment of people's expectations of, you know, when they're going to put something in the mail and when it's actually going to get there. And again, not to say we couldn't adjust, but I think between some of their benefit packages at the post office, I've read some pieces about some of the ways they handle healthcare costs and stuff for employees. There's some work they could do. Retirements are fairly generous.
It seems easier to lop things off than it is to get back and renegotiate labor contracts.
But yeah, and sure, and that's in what kind of a constituency does Honeydew or Blocksburg mount compared to a big postal workers union? Nevertheless, it's that universal service, and I know that people buying online and everything, paying bills online.
Or just email instead of the letter.
Sure. There's a lot of that has changed.
The model has changed.
Yeah.
And it seems it's kind of like when your congressman brings home the bacon to your district. You yell and you scream about everybody and all this pork, and yet nobody turns down for the home district that little slice of pork that came home. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out, though.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by.
Okay. Thank you.
And that nice plug for Alder Point and Blocksburg and all those places. Yeah.
So
No, we don't have enough time.
Okay.
We'll have to do that next time.
All right.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.
Okay. I'll hand that to the next